Have you enjoyed listening to the CrowdPaw Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some CrowdPaw merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to CrowdPaw.org/merch, CrowdPaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your CrowdPaw look.
Your professional development is one of the keys to your career success. When you combine your desire to grow with actionable steps, your journey to success becomes an incredible reality.
Hi, I'm Paul Ferranby, aka CrowdPaw, and welcome to CrowdPaw Leadership, where we learn how to become the most incredible versions of ourselves by learning from each other. First off, if you're only listening to this episode, I want you to make sure you know that you can also watch it on YouTube. But regardless if you're listening or watching the show, I really appreciate your support. Today, I have the honor of having Julia Rock on the show. She is the founder and CEO of Rock Career Development. I like what you did there. A consulting firm focused on helping companies reduce turnover, improve employee engagement through leadership transformation. So that's just a little bit about you, but how about you introduce yourself the way you would do it?
Man, well, thank you so much, Paul, for having me. I'm excited to be on the platform with you today. Man, like you said, I'm the founder and CEO at Rock Career Development, but what I like to call myself is a leadership evangelist. So leadership evangelist. I believe that a lot of the challenges we have in organizations that we're trying to fix with employee engagement perks and team building and pizza parties, all those kinds of things, can be tied back to leadership. And the same thing goes for even like more fundamental problems, whether it's operations strategy, revenue loss. A lot of things are tied back to leadership and leadership decision-making and leadership effectiveness. And so I tell them, like, I'm a leadership evangelist, because if we can fix leadership in organizations, we can turn organizations around and we can make the workplace experience a lot better for the employees who work there.
That's absolutely incredible, being a leadership evangelist. So I'm assuming that you weren't always a leadership evangelist. I'm wondering, how did you come to the point where you're so enamored with leadership that you want to become an evangelist for it?
Yeah, so my story, and I worked in corporate for a long time. So I was in oil and gas for about 12 years. And prior to that, I was in financial services for a few years. And that's really where, in addition to me coaching clients, and I'll get to that in a second, but working in leadership, working in oil and gas, which is a primarily male-dominated field, very conservative, lots of traditional processes and things, I learned about what leadership looks like, what people responded to, and then what people didn't respond to as the groups, as the age groups got younger and as the workforce became more diverse. Because when I started at my oil and gas company in 2012, and then we fast forward to 2025, things looked a little different over that time frame, 2024 when I left. Mm. And so that was really where I started to see some of the differences in leadership styles and seeing what was effective and what wasn't. And then in addition to that, I was coaching clients. I started coaching clients unofficially when I was in college, helping them with resumes and interviews. And then over time, I started to help people in a more serious fashion. And I launched my business in July of 2013. And since that time, and just coaching people over all those years and hearing what people were coming to me for coaching about, it's like, so this is not really an issue with your job. It's an issue with your boss, right? It's not an issue with the work itself. It's an issue with your boss, with the culture. And so having that kind of real life culture experience in corporate, and then also seeing what I had happening with the clients I was serving, whether it was I coached leaders, I coached early career, mid-career, you name it. And the same themes kept popping up no matter what level I was at. And I'm like, okay, so this is a leadership issue. And so after, you know, really seeing that from both sides, I said, well, I've got some tools and some skills and expertise that I've built that I can share. Because also I got into leadership in corporate. And I started to model certain behaviors that I found, for me, felt authentic, but also would create a better working experience for my employees. And when I saw how well they responded to it, it's like, okay, so there are things here that work. So why don't we just do more stuff that works?
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of leaders aren't trained on what works. And so that's part of why I became a leadership evangelist, because it's like we've overcomplicated leadership. Leadership is not complicated. It's just hard. But if I can evangelize enough people and let them know that it is just hard, but it can be done, you can be successful if you have the right mindset, strategies, and tools, you know, there's an opportunity for you to really grow and thrive as a leader.
Absolutely. I really like how you mentioned that leadership isn't complicated, but in the same breath, saying that it is hard. Because I think sometimes people can think, no, leadership is easy. You just tell people what to do, do everything the same. It's fine. Like, why are you so stressed out? Why is that hard? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, it's not easy because we have to deal with people, and people are inherently different. Good leaders realize that and don't try and just treat everyone the same way.
Exactly. Exactly. We're not trying to paint everyone with the same brush. And that's you make a really great point there. What I've seen some leaders do is they're trying to use the same style, no matter what group they go into, no matter what setting they're in, no matter the difference in skill set or age or on their teams, they're just trying to do the same thing. And it's like, everybody just get on board or don't, forgetting that we're not leading ourselves. You have a team of people that you're asking to follow you. And so if you're not cognizant of what their needs are or how they differ or any of the nuances, you're going to lose people. You're going to wonder, well, why is the team not responding? Why are they not performing? It's like, well, because you're trying to do your own thing. You're leaving them behind, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to leave people behind.
Right.
I know you mentioned you work with a lot of different types of people, whether it's early career or senior leaders. So I guess, is there a particular group that you gravitate towards the most, or you work with more than others, or is it kind of across the board?
Yeah. So for me, I found the sweet spot is really going from middle managers to executive and C-suite level. You know, I worked with early career folks for a long time, but where I have been able to find my ability to make a lot more impact is with middle managers up to the C-suite. Also, because for folks who are at that level, they have had some experience dealing with maybe changing cultures and transitions. And so there's a certain baseline that we're able to work through. And then what the joy for me is helping them also find a certain level of clarity, right? When you're early career, it's like, hey, I'm willing to try things and I'm going to find my path and I'm going to forge ahead, because you have that kind of youthful exuberance. You know,
yeah,
remember when we all graduated from college, we're all going to do the thing, right?
Yeah.
That's very different than when you get into kind of the middle management and then senior management and executive leadership, because you've been doing the same kind of thing and you've been in the same kind of environments, and perhaps you've lost your spark a bit. You've lost your way. You may have lost your identity in this job. And so there's a lot more there for me in terms of really being able to uncover and unpack and help them find clarity. And also, it gives them a chance to reflect on who have I become in this process over the years, and am I in the right place? Because so many leaders, they, you know, their careers are just moving along and they're going with it, but they haven't taken the time to take a step back and say, do I even want to be a leader? Do I even want to manage this team? Do I even want to work here? Right? It's one thing
That's
when you're
a good question.
You know, it's one thing when you're early career, right? And it's like, man, I got to pay off student loans, right? And that's all you're concerned about when you graduate. Like, I just need a job. I need to pay off student loans and so forth, get my own apartment. And this economy, can I buy eggs, right?
My goodness.
You know what I mean? Can
the
we even
eggs.
Buy eggs, right? So, but when you get into folks who have had an established career, you start to have some of those additional conversations as to what has happened in your career to this point. What did success look like to you when you first started? What did leadership look like to you when you first started? And now fast forward to this point in your career, how have those things changed? And have you lived up to the expectations you've had of yourself? Was this the career path you even wanted? So there's a lot more discovery work that I'm able to do that I really enjoy. So no tea or shade to the early career folks. I'm happy to help if you need me. But that's just where I have found my sweet spot.
That's fair, because there's a lot more life has happened and it's like kind of unpacking all of those things.
That's right.
That's good. So when you're working with them, is there any common things that come? I think you mentioned a couple of them, but if they're common themes that you see someone coming in that we need to work on this first. It's like, you think this is an issue, but this is actually something we need to focus on first.
Yeah. So clarity is the biggest thing that is the through line through all of the clients I work with, because whether you're like, oh, my boss is getting on my nerves or my team isn't performing and so forth, we get back to the clarity as to, well, who are you and what do you value? And so that's a baseline that I go through with all my clients. You know, no matter what topic they want to go through, what I can support them on, who are you and what do you value? Because that's going to guide how you show up at work, how you lead, how you interact with people, the expectations you set with your team. And so that through line is what I work with my clients on. And because once they find that clarity, then they're able to say, hey, I haven't really been asking my team directly for what it is that that I need them to do. I value a certain level of results or a certain level of performance or a certain level of integrity, but I haven't ever told them that. I just showed up and expect them to know, and I'm upset that they aren't delivering. And it's like, well, if they don't know, they can't do it, right? But if you haven't taken the time to think that through, to say, well, what is it that I value? Who am I in this role, and what kind of impact do I want to have? Because then again, that's what you're able to share with your team. That's, you know, those are the conversations you're able to drive with them, set the right expectations. And then also make sure that you don't lose your identity in the job. That's why another reason why people show up in a certain way is because this job is my life, right? This job is who I am. I'm the VP of marketing or what have you, or I'm the senior director of whatever it is incorporated. And because we tie ourselves to those titles, we then show up in a different way at work, because if this doesn't work out, that means that we ourselves are failing. That means we ourselves are deficient in some way. And so when you find that clarity about who you are, what you value, and what kind of impact you want to have, that then permeates every single thing you do at work.
That's really good. So you take them on this path to self-discovery first.
That's right.
And then from there, you can build and develop their leadership.
Absolutely. Because even with, like, because I've worked with women as well, I have both male and women clients. And, you know, sometimes the questions about, you know, confidence and imposter syndrome and so forth. But we go back to, okay, before we get into what you think you're deficient at or you don't belong or whatever the case is, who are you? Take away your titles, take away the whatever, but who are you? And when was the last time you asked yourself that question on a real level? And you hear them talk about, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a friend, they go through all these things and my friends come to me for this and I'm supporting this. And then you hear it just kind of start to go and they start to light up and so forth. And it's like, these are the things that should be grounding you so that no matter what's happening at work, no matter what someone's saying about you, that you know who you are, independent of the job title, the degree, the promotion that you got passed over for. Having that ground, that clarity as to who you are independent of work makes a huge, huge difference.
That's really good. Having the clarity for who you are, because on the other side, because I know you mentioned you did career coaching or help people with career at the beginning, is I'm thinking of when people get laid off or lose a job, I think that's why it is so heartbreaking, because they feel like a part of them is gone, or maybe all of them is gone. Because their identity was in what they were doing in their job. Now they don't have the job. So they're like, who am I?
Yeah. You know, I used to do a lot of career transition work for athletes as well. I still do some of that.
Wow.
But yeah, so helping athletes transition from sports. So they were going and finding a new career. And it's a very similar thing, right? Like when your career ends, whether it's an injury, I had a client whose career ended due to COVID and other things. Now you feel like you're having to start from the bottom, right? And if your entire life you've been an athlete, you've been praised for your athletic ability, you've made a ton of money, all this kind of stuff. And now it's like, man, I got to go work at a bank, or I got to go sit at a desk, or I got, you know, there's a lot of identity that's tied up in that. Like, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be at that level. And so it's going back to, but who are you outside of your sport? You know, like what value do you provide outside of that? And what I talk to anybody about in transition, whether it's a layoff, whether it's changing industries, whether it's, you know, going from sports to another career, you know, I always talk about the importance of what is the silver lining for me in this moment? What is the silver lining for me at this time in making this career transition? Because it's easy to get lost in I'm starting over, right? I'm starting from scratch. I'm starting from the bottom. But I always say it's not about starting over. It's about starting fresh. So that's a real silver lining that folks can have, no matter, like I said, layoff or changing industries or what have you, and you feel like you're starting from the bottom. It's about starting fresh. You have a chance to write a new story, to write a new chapter, to achieve success in a different way. And does it suck at the beginning? Sure. You know, we're not going to make any bones about that. You know, I fully understand that. But at the same time, it's like, but you have an opportunity to kind of take a step back now and say, what do I want my life to look like now? It was just moving along before I was on board. It was flowing and the money was good and all the things. But you may have just been going through the motions. You may have just been going through the career. But was it still something you loved? Was it still something you enjoyed doing? Was it something that you still felt purpose in? And sometimes these moments of transition allow us the moment to just breathe and think and reflect and realize, hey, maybe this isn't even where I wanted to be in the first place. So this is an opportunity for me to shift gears in a way where I can still pursue purpose in a way that feels aligned for me.
Yeah, pursuing purpose is so key. And it can be tough sometimes. Especially.
For sure.
When you're not sure if what you're doing right now is what you should be doing. But I'm curious for your story, because you mentioned a couple different transitions from the finance side to the oil and gas to what you're doing now as a full-time entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like, kind of walk us through, like, either your journey of your clarity or self-discovery that kind of led you into those different things.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I've always liked to talk and help people. My parents have always been big humanitarians, but I also was always very career driven. And so when I was in college and I told my dad, I'm like, Dad, I want to be a sports agent. I think I had just watched Jerry Maguire or something. And I'm like, I'm going to be a sports agent, Dad. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, well, how much do sports agents make? What kind of a career are you going to have as a sports agent? And I had no facts. I was just like, I'm going to be a sports agent. And so my dad's like, I would advise you to think about a career that will allow you to have opportunities beyond just one industry or one sector. And so that's how I got into finance. My dad did finance. And so I studied finance. But while I was in college, like I said, I was starting to help people with their resumes. And because I realized, I'm like, well, there's a difference here. Like, if you are positioning yourself well, there's just a lot more opportunities. And so that's why I wanted to help people. So even as I graduated with my finance degree and I started in financial services, it's something I always held on to. And then when I started in oil and gas, that's when I coached one of my friends to his first six-figure job. And that's when he said, he's like, you know what, Julia, I appreciate the free help, but this is really something that you should make a business. And that's when I really said, okay, I'm going to truly try to monetize this. And that was back when I was charging $75 for a resume. times are different, yeah. But back then it was different. $75 for a resume. What a time to be alive.
Now, but that's just the price of eggs.
I'm telling you, you know, the inflation.
Yeah.
But you know, the through line was that I always wanted to help people. So even when I was in finance, and then when I got into oil and gas, I always wanted to help people still. And so that's why I held on to the career coaching and then leadership coaching and so forth. And then one of the things that I found was when I got into corporate and I had the opportunity to lead people. And I'm just going to be honest, the reason I started my business was I saw the stark difference in the opportunities that people of color, particularly Black people, were getting versus those who were not Black. So I'm not going to do the whole POC dance. It was truly Black people versus non-Black.
It's real.
And so seeing that and knowing that I had skills to help serve the people who look like me and level the playing field for them, that was another real kind of push for me to start my business and formalize it and really do more. So even though I was seeking to create impact as a leader in corporate, I'm like, I can't give up on this. I really want to grow this so that more people who look like me are not going to be hamstrung by, I don't have the access to the skills I need. I don't know how to put a resume together. I don't know how to interview. Because I saw the difference when I'd be at career fairs and other things, the people who looked like me, a lot of them would come and they weren't fully prepared. And I'd look at their resume. It's like, you've got the chops looking at the resume. What's happening in the translation here? Right. And so that's where it's like, okay, so it's an insight and a knowledge issue rather than, hey, they don't have the skills. It's like, hey, they need some more resources and insights and knowledge. And that's another thing that really just kind of pushed me to do this work. And then it's continued to just grow from there.
Wow. That's such an incredible story of just seeing an opportunity and going for it.
Are you wondering what's next? Has everything you tried failed? Or maybe you just feel stuck? Then coaching may be right for you. The coaching relationship is a relationship totally centered on you. So what are you waiting for? Go to incredipal.org/coaching so I can help you become the most incredible version of yourself.
Yeah, that's all I have to say to that. It's because I think sometimes it's like different people on the show are like just talking to people. Sometimes people are like, well, I don't know what I want to do. And they just kind of fumble around. But there's different things that you're passionate about because there's things that you already had a passion and you were just following the passion that have led you to where you are right now.
Absolutely. And I'll say, you know, that I probably in the last year or two of my career, I was feeling the pull as to in my corporate career, feeling the pull as to, hey, you need to go and strike out on your own. And I'm like, no, I want to save. I'm doing the expat thing. I don't want to do it. And so I'm a believer in Christ. So and I just felt that pull and I kept like ignoring it. But here's the true story. In 2023, I did a TEDx and it's done well. But here's how it That's here's awesome. How it turned out. When I did the TEDx, everyone else's talk from my stage, it went live a few months later. So we did our TEDx in May and everyone else's talk was live by about, you know, September, October. And my talk was the only talk that didn't come out. And I'm wondering what's going on. I'm emailing the stage. I'm doing all these things. Like, why won't this talk come out? Mm-hmm. And so finally, February of 2024, remember I did the talk in May of 23 and February
man, almost
of 20,
a year later,
February 24, that's when I made the decision. I'm like, you know what, God, I'm going to just go and do the thing that you're telling me to go do. I made the decision on a Sunday that I was going to put in my resignation. Would you believe that Wednesday of that week, I discovered that my TEDx talk had been out for 3 days and it had 28,000 views by the time I looked
goodness.
At it.
The same day?
That you same put in week. Your, that same,
the same week.
Week. Yeah. So I made the decision on Sunday and then so if it's like by 3 days, I'm like, that thing had to come out either Sunday night or Monday, depending on the hour. And I was just like, man, God, you really be doing stuff, man. You really be out here.
He be out here. No, I totally understand.
So I tell people that with the work that I do now, and I call it leadership evangelism, it's work that I know that I'm supposed to be doing because he would not let that. I prayed. I wanted to email people to get my talk to come out and nothing happened. And the stage, they didn't have any answers for me. They're like, we don't know. This is very strange. This never has happened to us before. And that's where I was just like, something else is going on. And like I said, at that point, I'm like, it was either, like you said, the same day or the Monday after. And it had, you know, 28,000 views. It was featured by TED. It had the TED like thumbnail on it, the TEDx thumbnail. It was insane. And I was like, okay, God, you be out here. You be out here in real life. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I'm also a believer. I say Jesus is first and I am second.
Yes.
And it's so cool what happens when you just surrender to God and he just shows up when you least expect it. It always is when you least expect it.
Yeah. I really thought that talk was never going to come out. I was like, everyone's going to think I'm a TEDx fraud because I was like, oh, I have a talk coming out and it never came out. I was just
like
this is super
talk?
Awkward. And then poof, it came out and I was just like, okay.
That's really cool. We'll have to link the talk to this episode
too. Thank you.
For sure. But yeah, what was the subject of that talk?
Yeah, so it's actually something that I'm getting hired to talk a lot about now is burnout. So the angle I took in the TEDx talk was a different angle to burnout. So looking at the hidden factors of burnout. So not necessarily the things we talk about, like a workload or your boss. It's more internal stuff. But it was really thinking about how burnout shows up and what we can do to begin mitigating that, and how our leadership teams at work can also help mitigate that. And so that's, in this day and age, that's one of the things I get hired to talk about the most. People have run out of gas. They've lost their spark. They've lost, you know, their energy and enthusiasm, and organizations are wanting them to get that back. But the hard message is, it's like, well, how did we get here in the first place, right? It's easy to say, well, let's just get the team together and go to Topgolf. It's easy to say that, right?
It's always top.
ain't it always Topgolf? Like, please. But it's like, let's get everybody together and do that. But it's like, but how did we get here? Do you think that Topgolf is really going to solve the deeper rooted issues of people feeling burnt out, heard, unseen, unrecognized? Do you really think a one-day $100 event at Topgolf is going to solve all that? And so that's really what I try to dig deeper with when I talk about burnout now, is like, we've got to do more work. Like, this little patch band-aid effort to try to improve burnout, employees are going to see through that, because it's going to seem like a gimmick. It's going to seem kind of thin, and they're going to see through that, and you're going to break trust with them, and some of them may leave, and you know, and then the ones who are left, they burn out because they're taking on the work of the people who left, and then they leave too, and then it's a vicious,
absolutely a vicious cycle. And with Topgolf, it's just like, the reason your employees were burnt out was not because of lack of Topgolf.
Just read the room, guys.
It's really funny, but it's those quick fixes, or trying to focus on the symptoms instead of like the root cause behind it. What is this? What are the systems in place systematically, the stuff we've been doing that got us here? So really, as you work through with them to uncover those things that they may already know, but they don't want to talk about. But as you come in and uncover it, it helps for sure.
Yeah, because you're holding up a mirror to yourself, right? When you really look at the reasons that employees are leaving, the employees that are burnt out, it's about holding up a mirror and saying, what are we as an organization not doing, right? There's some people that they have personal issues. That's a separate thing, that no matter what you do for them, that life may be getting the best of them. But by and large, for employees that are burnt out on the job, It really is something that you have to take a mirror to yourself as an organization, as a leadership team, and say, well, what is our role in this? And very often people just don't, that's uncomfortable for people, because that means you have to be held accountable for your actions. And that's one of the things that I say I preach about, is around accountability for leaders. You know, when an employee screws something up, when they mess up a PowerPoint, or they send the wrong email, or they don't do something well, they hear about it. Their boss sits them down and they have a whole discussion about it, you know, and then they end up on a performance improvement plan or something. But then when leaders do things that are burning people out, or they're not making the right decisions, it's like, huh, okay, that person's going to get promoted now. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
That's what I was just thinking. It's like, they're getting promoted.
They're going to get promoted. And so it's insane. And so when you have these kind of conversations about how did we get here, if we're really honest with ourselves, it requires leaders to take a good hard look within and hold themselves accountable, which is just, it's uncomfortable.
It's definitely uncomfortable. And I'm wondering, like, as you come in and working with these leaders and you kind of hold a mirror up in front of them, how, I guess the percentage-wise, the rough estimate, how many of them are actually agreeing that they are part of the problem versus them pushing back and saying, no, it's the people? I'm just curious.
Man, so I would say in my journey, it's probably been about 50-50.
Okay.
I think for others, it may go a different way. But when I really just kind of look back over the history, I feel like it's 50-50, where you've had people who are willing to hold the mirror up and say, I really want to be better. I want to be a better leader. because I want people to stop leaving, or I want a different outcome. And then you have those who are just like, well, I don't know why they're leaving. I don't know what the issue is. I mean, I just, and it's just like the self-awareness is lacking. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to the beginning. And so that's been in my journey where I've just, and maybe it's just the luck of the draw with clients that I've had, but I find that I've just, it's been 50-50 with the folks I've worked with.
Yeah, I think like I've seen about the same. It's because the coin flip is that.
Really?
Is that. It's funny, though, because I saw a statistic somewhere that said that like 92% of people think that they're self-aware. But then, only like 5% of people actually are self-aware. And then even there's someone that came to talk to, actually it was on the previous episode that when this actually all comes out, remember he talked about it and he said that a lot of times people think that they're in the 5%. Like everyone is thinking that, oh yeah, 95% are not self-aware, but I'm definitely in the 5%. They're not
so
self-aware.
100% of us think we're in the 5%.
Exactly. We're not realizing if you're truly self-aware, you should ask the question, like, am I being self-aware in this moment? Because it's not just you're self-aware and it's just done. It's a continual process. It's
right.
Ongoing.
And I think the leaders who are self-aware, they're also willing to ask to be challenged and to be held accountable, right? So that if they are making a misstep, they're willing to say, help me, challenge me. You know, my team in Argentina that I was leading, I remember telling them, I said, if I'm doing something, if it doesn't make sense, tell me it doesn't make sense. Or if I'm going down a path that because of my lack of knowledge of the processes that I'm taking you down a path that's going to be too much work and inefficient, tell me that. I'm not going to be offended by that because you guys are the experts. It doesn't matter that I'm the leader of the group. You guys are the experts. You have much more subject matter knowledge than me. And so, you know, there were times when I would have closed door meetings with the managers who reported to me like, Julius, this is stupid. Why are we doing this? And I'm just like, I'm not sure, you know? So what's a better option? And giving people the space to share that, to hold you accountable, to bring things forward, it deepens the trust that you have with your organization. And it allows them to see you as a human being, right? If people just see you as a robot, right? That you can do no wrong. You're perfect. You're perfectly self-aware, right? You're perfectly self-aware. You're all the things. Then it's hard for your people to relate to you because they're making mistakes. They're having rough days. So if that's not the level that you're on, that you seem almost untouchable, unreachable, and then how comfortable can they be bringing their concerns and bringing their ideas and bringing their mistakes? They're going to hide things from you because they don't want to go to I don't want to go to Paul. You know, I don't know how Paul is going to accept, but going to take this, right? And so we've got to just get off our high horses, leaders, man. And be willing to be held accountable, be willing to be challenged, you know, be willing to be vulnerable to say, I don't know, or I don't have the right answer for you right now, but here's what I'm willing to do. That takes a certain level of courage, but that's what our people are looking for from us.
Yeah, just the courage. And I like that you use the word courage too, because anytime you're doing stuff that you haven't done before, there's some aspect of fear. Like, how am I going to be received? What's going to happen? But having courage or being courageous doesn't mean that you're not fearful what's going to happen. It's doing it anyway, because you realize that the end result is better than what your fears might be in this moment.
And I think that when you make the decision to become a leader, you make the decision that your fear comes second to the, you know, to the success and the well-being of your team. That's the decision that we make when we step into leadership positions. You can't try to prioritize yourself and then try to lead. That just doesn't work well, because at some point you're going to have to give up one thing. And if you're prioritizing yourself, that means your team is the first to go. And that's really kind of stands at odds with what true leadership is. So to your point, you know, courage doesn't mean that you're not afraid or, you know, you don't have concerns as to how this is going to turn out. It may mean your job. It may mean, you know, whatever the issue is, it may mean your job, it may mean an opportunity, it may mean a promotion that you had your eyes on, it may mean that. But at the same time, you decided that leadership was the role that you were going to step into. So you can't just take the bigger paycheck and the bigger title, right, without the responsibility that comes with a leadership role.
Yeah, no, that's so true. So you want all the responsibility, but none of the accountability to it. It comes with both. You can't just have one or the other.
Exactly. So you want the director title, the VP title, the SVP title that comes with a cost to it.
It definitely comes as a cost. That's really awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So I'm just curious, because with the different transitions and like just being like a full-time entrepreneur now, are there things that you've noticed that maybe were surprising to you? Or like, because a lot of my audience is younger professionals, I like 20 to 40 year old range. A lot of them, they're in STEM, but maybe they're aspiring entrepreneurs. Some are entrepreneurs as well. So I didn't know from what you've learned or are learning, because even you've had this business since 2013, so it's not new to you, but maybe newer doing it full time. I guess what does that transition look like?
Man. So I've made a lot of transitions even within the business, because for a long time it was just kind of one-on-one coaching as well as providing writing services. And then over time now I'm doing corporate and nonprofit, and so doing more kind of B2B. And then going from that, you know, having a full-time job to now doing this full-time, it tests you in more ways than you think. You know, part of it is, you know, when you're in corporate and you've risen the ranks, going back to that identity thing, it's like, man, you have a certain level of respect that comes with, you know, with your role. But then when you're a full-time entrepreneur and, you know, certain people have heard of me, have heard of my brand, have watched a TEDx something, but there are a lot of organizations like, who are you? Where did you come from? And it's humbling. It's humbling, man. It's like, okay, we are grinding this thing out.
From ground zero.
Ground zero. But for me, what I had to realize is that I'm not building this business because I want it to be that this is Julia Rock, the brand. It's more about how many people can I impact? How many workplace experiences can I help to transform? And if I get discouraged or if I get offended or if I fall away, that means that there is somebody who is robbed of a better workplace experience that I could have helped them with. And so recalibrating on that has made it easier for me to keep going on the days where I'm just like, I'm going to flip over a table, right?
No, those days, yeah.
But that recalibration is like, well, why are you doing this? And it's like, if, you know, at the end of the day, if more people have better workplace experiences, and that means they go home and they're more loving to their family, they're more fun with their friends, they take better care of their health, I have a role to play in that. And if I give up that role because my feelings are hurt, how many people am I robbing of a better experience? And so that has really transformed how I approach entrepreneurship, the rough days. And then how I celebrate the great days. It's like, man, I can celebrate this because this is impact in real life. So hopefully that's helpful for the audience.
Absolutely.
I know that entrepreneurship is hard, especially if you're starting from the ground. You're just coming with a concept. You're hoping to get your first client. I know the feeling. But tying back to that why and that purpose is going to be what gets you through the rough days. Motivation isn't enough. I will tell you, the motivation fades. Motivation fades, but purpose and discipline is what's going to keep you going every day of the week.
That's a bar right there. Motivation fades, but purpose and discipline will keep you going. Well, that's so really good.
Mic drop.
Yeah, definitely a mic drop. I don't know if we can continue past that, but I do want to give you an opportunity. If there's anything else you want to share, either about yourself, your story, or with the audience as we wrap things up.
Yeah, no, I would want to just share a piece of advice that I got from a manager of mine when I was in financial services. I had a really rough day at work. I had messed some things up in our financial forecast, and I was just sitting in my cubicle, just kind of beating myself up about it. And he walked by and he's like, hey, Julia, you know, what's going on? I'm like, I screwed this thing up. And And I'm so frustrated with myself. And he asked me, he said, hey, have you done this before? I said, no, this was my first time. And so I'm really sad that I screwed it up. And he gave me this advice that I still take with me to this day. He's like, well, Julia, if you're not making mistakes, you're not learning anything. And that has completely transformed how I function, how the days I screw up when it's something that I'm like, I'm learning, I'm trying something new, the investments that have gone bust. Because as an entrepreneur, you will have some investments that don't pan out as anticipated, right? Or in your early career, you may get in this job that looks like glitz and glamour on the outside and you get into it and it sucks. You know, you're going to have those days. But remember that if you're not making any mistakes, you're not learning anything. And anything that's happening to you, there's always a lesson in it. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but there's always something you can learn from wherever you are in your business or in your career. There's always a lesson. So don't get lost in the mistakes and what you could have done better. Learn from them, grow from them, and continue moving forward.
Oh, that's really good. I love that. Thanks for sharing that. I like to say, the only L's I take are lessons.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to use that now.
No, use it. Take it. No, it's really good. I really appreciate you being on the show, sharing your wisdom. Also, just sharing, being really vulnerable and just talking about your journey, because I know sometimes it's really easy to see someone that, like yourself, I'm glad you mentioned being on TEDx. If you weren't going to talk about, I was going to bring it up. Someone that's on the TEDx stage, and that's something that a lot of people aspire to do, but they don't see what are the experiences and things that got you there. Mm-hmm. What are the different paths you take? And even you being open about, like, in entrepreneurship itself, it's hard. There are hard days.
It's worth it, but it's hard days. And I want to make sure that we give people the real when it comes to that, because I'm a fan of keeping your 9-to-5 as long as you can keep it, keep your benefits, especially if you've got a family, keep those benefits. And so I want to make sure that people hear the real thing, because you go and you see this glamorized version of entrepreneurship on social media, and then you leap and you're like, wait, why isn't entrepreneurship like this for me? I'm like, because that's a facade.
Yeah, it's not real. It's not like that for them either. It's just on social media.
Exactly. I'm like that is staged. And so as much real insights as I can give people so they can make the best decisions for themselves and their future, I want to do that. So thank you for having me. This was awesome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to make sure people know how to stay connected with you, whether it's your socials or website, whatever you want to.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram and is it Facebook? I don't even know if I'm really on Facebook no more. but I'm at the Julia Rock on Instagram and at Rock Career for my business. And then LinkedIn is my primary platform. So you can look for me, Julia Rock. The handle is Julia-Rock. So that you can make sure that you find the right one. But I would love for you to connect with me over there. That's where I share some insights. I go live every week. So come rock with me on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. LinkedIn is definitely my favorite platform.
For sure.
Even though it's funny, because I'm pretty sure we got connected through Thread/Instagram.
And now that's bigging up LinkedIn, talking about LinkedIn is a vibe. Meanwhile, we met on Threads.
Yeah, I know. It's so random. But no, LinkedIn is definitely my favorite platform by far.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thanks for sharing that. But
Thank you.
To the audience, I know you got something for Julia's story. Really a way to rock your leadership, because it is amazing what you have done, amazing what you could continue to do. And I think one of the key things you talked about was definitely on the self-awareness and self-discovery piece. That's definitely a continual process, I think, for most people, like in my audience, or it's a younger audience. So even if you're not sure who you are or who you're developing to be, I would definitely encourage you to reach out to a coach. If you can't afford a coach for whatever reason, talk to a friend, talk to someone. Don't try to do it on your own. Don't, because you get caught up in your head. There's a lot of things that you don't see, but definitely reach out to Julia. Stay connected with her. Yes. A lot of great content. You didn't mention your LinkedIn lives, but I'll mention your LinkedIn lives. Make sure they get connected in that.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's basically it. But make sure that you continue to develop your story, get deeper in your self-discovery, and that will make you truly incredible.
Love it.
Be sure to rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We'll see you here next time. And be incredible. Incredible.
Have you enjoyed listening to the Incredible Paul Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some Incredible Paul merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to incrediblepaul.org/merch, incrediblepaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your Incredible Paul look.